Hi, everybody. Good evening. Welcome to Evoke Therapy Program's broadcast. It is June 14th, 2018. Tonight's broadcast is for family members, siblings, or Evoke alumni or participants. And really, it's an opportunity to ask any question about Evoke, understanding why we would do what we do, what we're about, any question about children that might be in our program, their specific struggles, how to support them, how to relate to them. You can also ask a question for and on behalf of a family member or friend or another of your children, meaning that if there are questions that they've asked you that you would like to see my answer to the question, I'm happy to address those. So it's a pretty broad category. If you pass on those questions, Alex, who's moderating for me this evening, will collect those and he will then submit them to me when I run through all the pre-submitted questions tonight. So with that, let me get right into the pre-submitted questions. All right. Why won't my child be ready to come home after Evoke? You know, it's probably the first and oldest question of that we've been asked of as wilderness therapists, that we've been asked. And really, it just comes out of experience. I will tell you that in many cases, especially early on in my career, my approach, my perspective was that wilderness therapy was such a powerful and dynamic intervention. And we saw really incredible outcomes and results with our children. And so since I came from outside of wilderness therapy, since I was trained as a family therapist, that's what my degree is in, I was inclined to recommend, to support parents' decisions in bringing their children home, not challenging the idea. And really, the idea of children benefiting from going to therapeutic schools, programs, support after Evoke, really came out of experience. So I want to tell you, it's not a theoretical perspective. That's very important for me to make clear to you. It comes out of experience. It evolved as I saw what was going on. And so all I know from my observations is when families get to this point, oftentimes they need more time to maintain the gains that they've experienced in wilderness therapy, both parents and children. And while there's in almost all cases, a stepping down of a level of care, meaning that there are more choices, more freedom, there's more responsibilities in some ways. It's a nice time to practice. It's not quite real life or the way things are at home, but it's a step toward that. And so I just want to explain to you that wilderness therapy is a very small box, right? While it might seem to some to simply be restrictive, right? It's also a very, very supportive box, and there aren't a lot of distractions. My favorite analogy in talking to parents about it is the juggling analogy. That in wilderness therapy, you learn to juggle three balls very well. And then after wilderness therapy, school or work is handed to you, other temptations, exposure. There's more exposure to staff, maybe to the community. And so with those other three balls that are handed to you, you drop all of them, right? And so my question is, have you forgot how to juggle the three balls? Absolutely not. But when you have six, it's a completely different animal. And so learning to juggle six is an important perspective. You know, wilderness therapy is really evolved when we opened our program. It'll be 20 years this July. It really evolved into an assessment and stabilization and a preparation for whatever the next step was. Early on, it was seen by many as a standalone intervention. But clinically, experientially, meaning from our experience and observations, we developed this idea. So it's just rare that a family and a child have enough legs beneath them, right? That they have enough to support it just going back home with maybe an outpatient therapist. So that's all I can tell you is that it's from my experience. Something that you don't have to do. You know, it's very important that your Evoke therapist not be in a power struggle with you over it, right? Not shame you with it, but clearly make their recommendations and make a case. And in many cases, I often talk about, it's not the what of your decision that I would challenge, but it is the why of your decision that I might challenge. The thinking that goes into the decision that you make, that I'll explore with you. And so sometimes that can be illuminating for you to think about, well, I feel guilty, or I can this time guarantee success versus we're ready to try it home and I expect it to be more difficult. It is harder than it is for everybody, for the most part, at home compared to residential treatment, therapeutic boarding schools, treatment centers, and so forth. I want to be very clear about that. It's harder. I understand that on its surface, it's more attractive to children and maybe to families, but it is harder. You have less support. You have less parameters. You've expanded the box to be much, much broader. So that's the best way that I can kind of explain that answer. Can our other child visit the field with us? It absolutely makes sense as a question. So let me get to this. It's generally not recommended that you bring your other children out to the program. It's a relatively short visit. Again, we're kind of like the emergency room in the hospital care system, right? That stabilization, first intervention, a process. And so limiting visitors early in the treatment process makes sense. It's a very limited time. And so what ends up happening a lot of time is the other child, the sibling, is so far behind in their understanding of the work that the wilderness therapist ends up spending so much of the focus and energy on them, catching them up to speed, supporting them in the process, explaining, coaching, instructing them, that the child that's in the program and the parents lose the opportunity to do some of the work that they need to do. I absolutely believe that children are part of the system. And at some point during the process, it is important for them, valuable for them to be brought into the process. But typically not during wilderness therapy. There are rare exceptions, but that's the typical answer. We really want a focused on the child that's here and their parents, all of whom have been exposed to, immersed in the education, the therapy, the letter writing, the phone calls, all of whom have had that background to support this kind of a visit. So it's a very, very rare, very rare occasion that a wilderness therapist and Evoke therapist would think that is an appropriate step in this process. And again, there's exceptions, but they're extraordinarily rare in the process. Will my child also write letters home to their siblings? That's more common. Again, we start with parents and step-parents, whoever the guardians are. We start with them first. Sometimes the sibling is asked or invited to write a hopes and intentions letter. In many cases, children are more apt to listen to their siblings. They kind of see them as allies compared to parents. And so writing a hopes and intentions letter might be something that happens during the process. And aside from that, as the child spends time focusing on him or herself, relating to his or her parents, it can be something that the wilderness therapist invites later on in the process. But again, it's about focus. It's not right or wrong. It's about timing and keeping the focus very narrow, very specific, very concentrated early on, and then expanding or broadening it later so it doesn't lose its volume, its impact, its intensity in the process. Siblings sometimes are less likely to be focused on the therapeutic issues and to support them. It's not their job, right? It's not their job to parent. So, in my cases, somewhere around 40 or 50% of clients in the program, students in the program, would receive a letter from their sibling at some point in time. I also want to say I didn't like it when parents mandated that the children at home wrote the letters, believing that the children had something they needed to say. Now, making the invitation to that sibling at home, absolutely appropriate. But sometimes siblings at home need to have some boundaries, right? They've been through the ringer. They've experienced some trauma with the conflict and the turmoil. Maybe secondarily from watching their sibling and parents go at each other, and sometimes directly from the sibling. And so I think it's incredibly important that we honor that aspect in treatment and not impose it on siblings who have experienced some trauma from the process. All right. How far will my child typically hike each day? This absolutely varies. You know, our ideal is that they're hiking 4 or 5 days a week. If groups are functioning well and weather permitting, hiking 4 or 5 days a week with 2, maybe 3 layover days, meaning that they're getting their laundry, they're getting food supply. 2 days include the therapist visit. So the therapists are doing their sessions, going over reading and writing assignments, being able to sit down with your child in session. You know, it's not very conducive to therapy sessions with the therapist for them to be hiking. So 2 days for the therapist visit, maybe one of the day would be typical. And it depends on long summer days where weather is fine. You know, groups might hike 6, 7 miles. Depends on the type of terrain too. Hiking on a trail or a dirt road, you can get a lot farther. Hiking cross country requires 2 or 3 times the amount of energy. Too hot of weather in the summertime, we're not going to hike in the middle of the day. Too cold of temperatures in the wintertime, we're going to hunker down in a wall tent next to a fire and pay attention to just keeping children hydrated and warm during the process. So that's the variation that we think about with students and clients. Do you have any tips how to deal with my guilt for sending my child away? Well, that's a big question. It's an important part of the process. I don't know that I can answer that succinctly. I guess I don't have to answer it succinctly. This is an hour-long broadcast, but it's important that you do your work to take care of yourself. It's important that you know that guilt can erode your ability to do the right thing, right? Harriet Lerner, in her book, The Dance of Anger, says that we must be willing to feel guilt in order to do the right thing. And for decades now, when asking parents, after they told me that they knew what the right thing to do was and they didn't do it, and I asked them why did they do the wrong thing when they knew it was the wrong thing, according to their own value system, their response is so often that they felt guilty. So it's important that we start to understand what guilt is. And guilt is not conscience. Guilt is not necessarily correlated with morality. Guilt is our experience of hurting somebody else, which may or may not be okay. In other words, if I, for example, don't convert to the religion that my parents do as an adult, and I'm made to feel guilty, I'm suggested that I ought to feel guilty about that, do I do that? Should I live the life for somebody else, right? If I feel guilty for leaving my physically abusive spouse, right? Should I stay in it because I feel guilty? If I know that I need to set a really difficult and tough boundary with my child and their reaction will be hurt and anger and distrust and pushing me away, do I allow myself to be held hostage by the guilt that comes from that reaction? So it's important, I think, through therapy. I think the book, The Dance of Anger, can help some, or the podcast or broadcast on The Dance of Anger can help some. But I think it's really understand that we pick apart what guilt is. You know, there's a very, very popular broadcast by Brené Brown where she says, one of her two most famous TED Talks, where she says that shame is associated with mental illness and addiction and guilt is not. And she's wrong about that. She's absolutely wrong. Guilt is still a feeling of being threatened, of feeling bad about oneself. And it still can be paralyzing and compromising of who we are as a self. It's very, very, very easy for any of us to think of a situation where doing the right thing would cause us to feel guilty. Telling the truth in a relationship would cause us to feel guilty. Setting an appropriate, healthy boundary from healthy self-care would cause us to feel guilty. In fact, I talk about self-care a lot. I've been working with professionals about self-care a lot. And here's something fascinating. They often talk about they know what to do and can't do it. And the reason over and over and over again is guilt. It's really easy to kind of make a list. Almost anybody can make a list of appropriate self-care. That's not hard. There's no great insight in that. The hard thing is to do battle with your guilt and your shame. So it's a battle. It's an unlearning of things. It comes from our childhood where we were taught that what we did made our parents happy or sad, worried or proud. And so we were wired as children to believe that what somebody else felt was our responsibility. And then we go out in the world with our own children, with our own relationships. And we're triggered by that same message that when we upset somebody and we hurt somebody, that they feel guilty, that we feel guilty, that it's our fault and our responsibility. So guilt is a tricky one, and it's critical, absolutely critical that we do battle. You don't have to master it. I don't know many people who have mastered their battle with guilt and shame. But it is absolutely essential that we are in the fight. It is what will lead to enlightenment, serenity, clarity, groundedness, right? Healthy boundaries, healthy self-care, all those things. How can I best support my brother who's out of OAC? I think that's a fantastic question. It's one of my favorite questions. I think the best thing you can do is practice some vulnerability. And that can be as simple as learn something about what they're learning. Watch one or two of the webinars or listen to one or two of the podcasts that we have at Evoke. Read a book that your sibling, your brother, is reading in the program. Show up not knowing. Show up humble. Show up learning. I tell the story of a sibling who was going to visit her adult brother many years ago and called me for some ideas and support. She didn't want to set her brother back. She didn't want to trigger him. She was very concerned about that. And so I suggested that she show up at her first visit at the therapeutic school that he was at. And she show up and she just share that her anxiety about getting it wrong, about making a mistake, about tripping. And I said to her, wouldn't that be great? You've kind of been the successful one and he's been the failure and the screw up in the family. Wouldn't it be amazing if you showed up as the student, as the one not knowing? It would be such a relief to him to know that he actually might know something that you don't know because of what he's been exposed to at Evoke and to at his therapeutic school. And she wouldn't take it. She wouldn't do it. She could not be the good one, the right one. So just being open and learning and showing up as a student and making mistakes and being honest about how that feels, learning from some of the things that we talk about and teach with your brother can be helpful. Being interested in it. And if you want to go so far as to sharing some of your own vulnerabilities, insecurities, fears, inadequacies, that's fantastic. That's the best way to support. It's the best way to facilitate, encourage safety with your brother. So thank you for the question. And I'm happy to take any live questions that you've passed on to Alex at this point. First question comes in. My question is, why do 70% of the participants require aftercare and are unable to head home? I would hope for inverted numbers. Thank you. I think it's similar to, I spent a lot of time, that was a question that got sent in by email, and I spent a lot of time asking that question earlier. If you missed it in the broadcast, you can go back to one of the first couple of questions later and the recorded version, the archived version, when I talked about why they need aftercare. So thank you for that. I hope that answered. For those children who go home, what sort of support is available for them? Obviously, there's outpatient therapy. There is something called intensive outpatient, where two or three nights a week, students, clients, and families go to therapeutic activities. So you can ask for or look for intensive outpatient programs where children live at home. There are day schools at home. That can be a part of the process. So those are the basic ones. AA or NA for clients who identify as addicts, of course, can be helpful to the process. So if you're talking about a home environment, on some college campuses, in fact, you can research this, they have sober groups, sober dorms. That could be helpful for those in college and dealing with substance abuse disorder. So intensive outpatient, if there were more intensive outpatient programs in our country, I think a lot more children can go home. I think it's a nice step down for some of our clients. And so that's something you can explore. There are also wraparound programs, some based in Utah, that have a parent coach and a client or student mentor, right? They come out for visits, sometimes during the wellness therapy program, sometimes at home. So ask your educational consultant about that, or go to the NATSAT webpage to find out about those. Things like Homeward Bound and Vibe and Second Nature's 360. Some consultants have their own version of it that they've created because they see this need in this niche. We provide these broadcasts free to everybody through the podcast apps and the video versions of it to alumni families forever. Those can be supportive. Doing your own work, you know, coming to finding you, coming to finding family, pursuits program, in other intensive workshop programs like Onsite, Build Bridge to Recovery, and the Meadows and the Refuge and the House at Ocala, programs like that for parents to get more support, to continue their own work, can be very, very helpful for parents to be able to support children in the process. So those are just a handful of things that are out there. I wish there were more semi-structured programs in communities like IOPs that could help people, for sure. Any other questions that have been submitted? All right. I will go over the upcoming. If there are any more questions you want to add or follow up on, pass those on to Alex while I'm going over the upcoming slides and announcements. All right, if I can get this all working for myself, I'll start talking about it. Let's see, where are we? Okay. We ask all families to attend 6 12-step support groups after your child is enrolled at Evoke. So that's Al-Anon. You can go to alanon.org to look for meetings in your area, coda.org, or familiesanonymous.org. These are all free support groups for families. So there are very few things that are free. These are some things that are free. You can also go to nami.org, and nami.org, you can find free resources or affordable resources or classes in your area. So that's another resource for you. If you want to listen to these broadcasts while you travel on your portable device, on the iOS or iPhone devices, use the podcast app. On Android devices, download the SoundCloud app. On any computer, go to soundcloud.com. And on any of those platforms, search Evoke Therapy Programs. On Twitter and Instagram, you can find us by searching at Evoke Therapy. And on Facebook, you can search Evoke Therapy Programs. The Evoke Family Foundation on Facebook is an organization of alumni parents who have banded together to raise money to support people who can't afford therapy and programming. So if you want to give back, become involved, you can go and contact them there. We have new content on our blog all the time each week. So check in on the Evoke Therapy blog every so often. My book, The Journey of the Rogue Parent, is available in print, in digital form, or in audio form. Right now, the Amazon warehouse, I believe tomorrow, it'll be back up and full. You can go to the other buying options under the paperback tab and buy it from Evoke Therapy Programs directly. That's The Journey of the Heroic Parent. If you want to do a deep dive, if you want to do your own work, you can come to one of our intensives. The next Finding You intensive is July 18th through 22nd in Park City, Utah. That's a 4.5-day psychodrama, group therapy, art therapy, mindfulness, family of origin, look at your own trauma, your own wounds, your own relationship patterns. I do it myself every year, at least once a year. I've been doing it for many years. I provide them for professionals. I cannot endorse them strongly enough. You can also do a Finding Family. That's a private intensive. We also have a Finding You 2 coming up, October 10th through 14th. So if you've been to a Finding You, let us know if you want to come back to one. And we're going to put a second date on the calendar because the first one filled up already. We're also going to have, for the first time ever, an alumni intensive for students and clients who have gone through our wellness program. So that date will be announced in the next week or so. You'll be getting an email about that. If you are a professional in the therapeutic or treatment field, we host intensives for you, 2.5-day intensives. The next women's one where there's availability is September 9th through 11th. The next men's one is coming up July 8th through 10th. And any questions you have or to RSVP or to register, email intensives@evoketherapy.com. Parent support groups, free parent support groups coming up in Los Angeles, Sunday, July 1st, 4 to 7 p.m. Email melanie@evoketherapy.com for more information. In the Bay Area, Monday, July 2nd, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. In New York City, Sunday, July 8th, 7 to 9 p.m. And coming soon, we'll have our Chicago date announced. Workshops. We invite all parents. This is a 2.5-day multifamily experiential educational workshop. Again, we invite all families to come to these if they possibly can. The next one is June 23rd or 24th. It's coming right up. And that's at our Entrada location. Then we'll go back to Cascades in July. You can ask your wellness therapist, your child's wellness therapist, if a parent visit to the field can be paired along with this visit if the timing is right. Contact gail@evoketherapy.com for more info or to RSVP. Pursuits trips are our outdoor adventure trips for families or young adults. Think therapy light, sober fun. Any more questions come in? Looks like no more have come in. Thank you for joining us for and in behalf of your child. I am going on sabbatical until the first week in August. So we'll have several of our therapists will do guest webinars. We'll do their webinars over the next 6 or 7 weeks. And I look forward to getting back to you with fresh energy and revitalized spirit after some healthy self-care for me. So enjoy our other therapists over the next 6 or 7 weeks. Take care of yourselves for and in behalf of your child. Thank you for making the effort to look at yourself. That is the heroic journey, to look inside. Take care, folks. Bye-bye. Better year you'll be. Turns spin.